Hey guys, before we get into the show, I'd like to take a moment to introduce our podcast partners, Script Up. Script Up is a new coverage service created to help screenwriters improve their writing and unlock the potential in their stories through detailed feedback reports and video call consultations. I have personally vetted their services, and I can honestly tell you they will provide a detailed analysis of your script, along with useful notes and even a biography of the reader, so you know exactly who is reading your script. Head to scriptupstudio.com and enter discount code TSN10 for 10% off today. And now let's get to the show. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to the Screenwriters Network podcast. The Screenwriters Network is the largest Discord server of screenwriters in the world. And on this show, we interview members of the community. I'm your host, Smish, and today I am interviewing Nabil Chowdhury, also known in the server as Nabil AC. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So to give my listeners a little history on you, over the past few years, you've written and directed several short films, which have done really well in film festivals. And in 2019, a feature screenplay you wrote called Pod won several major contests, including ScreenCraft, Sci-Fi, and the Page Awards. It placed number one on the hit list and also made the top 10 of the 2019 Blacklist, which is amazing. Congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a whirlwind of a time the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, I bet.
Everything's occurred very quickly in this last year. So yeah, you know, winning ScreenCraft was the catalyst, I would say, for it all to start. And then Page obviously came soon after. And then obviously Reps followed, and the hit list and the Blacklist were in a matter of a few days in December. And that was just, it was a crazy few days. Lots of things happening.
Wow, it's really just like a domino effect, eh?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a moment which I sort of wanted to sort of capture in my memory and remember all the little bits, all those moments of excitement, the emails coming in or the congratulation phone calls from reps and all those types of things. They were very important for me to remember and to cherish, because, you know, I think putting in many years worth of work and to get some sort of reward at the end was wonderful. So I'm very sort of happy that all happened, but it's the beginning, right?
Right. So you started off making short films that you wrote and directed. Your shorts are called The Stranger, The Replacement, and The End of the World. You directed the first two. What made you switch gears and start writing feature scripts, or were you doing that all along?
Well, I was always writing. I wouldn't say to the best of my ability or even in the correct manner. but I was living in the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, in Abu Dhabi. And I wanted to make a shift into the film industry. I wanted to learn how to do it all. So what made sense to me was to learn how to make shorts and how to do the entire thing. I wanted to direct as well. So I did both at the same time. I thought it was necessary to understand how my writing could affect my directing, and in turn, how that could affect the editing. Obviously, the three principles of creating a cohesive story. So I got into it. I just threw myself into it. The Stranger was the first thing that I did. And it was essentially a test to see if I could write a conflicting scene and then shoot that scene and to see how it turned out, and to learn as much as I could from an experienced crew around me how this works. And I think that's the best ways, you know, that's the best film school, so I've been told, is just to throw yourself into making films. So that's exactly what I did.
Is your goal to direct a feature?
Yes, I think so. And that's what I would like to go to do eventually. I mean, even with Pod, which we spoke about briefly earlier, I wrote it with the idea that I would direct it one day. Something contained, something cheap, something that perhaps one day, if I could find the money, I would do it myself. So that's something that I definitely would like to get into. Until I earn the right to do that, I'm more than happy to continue writing and, you know, climbing up the ladder.
What kind of stories are you interested in telling?
Most of the things I write they come from a personal place. Pod is deeply personal to me. The Replacement is deeply personal to me. And I'll continue to do that. And I'll use whatever, you know, the genre, tell those stories. I think that's the way I was raised. When I, you know, were watching particular films, I always go back to one anecdote about how, as a young, you know, child, my parents obviously left films laying around in the living room and whatnot, and I'd pick up and watch the most ridiculous R-rated films without them knowing. And I remember one of the first earliest films was The Terminator. I picked up, and it wasn't the cyborg killing people, whatnot. And, you know, it was the fact that I identified and resonated with the hero, because to me it was a love story. And someone asked me, well, why are you watching this? And I was like, well, because it's the ultimate love story. It's about a man who comes back in time to save a woman who he loves, who he's never met. And so much so, at one point, he sacrifices himself. And that to me was the beauty of the film as a young boy. It was something that I struggled with, because when it came to the end, spoilers, Kyle Reese dies, and I'd always stop the film there, because for me, that seeing the hero die was absolutely unquestionable. You can't have that. That can't happen. But the most important aspect was the love story. So for me, I like to tell stories which can be visceral, can you know, sort of emotionally affect someone, and that I've experienced myself or have witnessed myself occur with people. That's what I like to get on page.
So tell me about Pod. Is this your first feature script?
It's indeed my first serious feature script. I tried before. I've been trying for the past 4 years, and I've written many, but none that I was confident about, or none that I was sure would resonate with people in a particular way, or indeed would be something that perhaps someone in Hollywood or wherever would want to make, you know, commercially viable. So it's the first serious screenplay. Yes, I would say that's right.
Okay, so tell us, what is Pod about, and what inspired you to write it?
Well, Pod is essentially about an astronaut who awakens in an escape pod and has found that many years have passed, and she's aged about 35 years because she's gone through a black hole while trying to destroy it on a mission. And something has gone wrong, and she's woken up, you know, moments have passed, but she's aged considerably. She's in her, you know, late 60s, early 70s, and how she has to deal with overcoming her fragility mentally and physically, and overcoming, you know, this threat which is chasing it, which is this huge black hole which is destroying our solar system and is on its way to Earth. And yeah, it's definitely a nod to some of my favorite sci-fi films. This taking a look at something like Sunshine, for example, which I think is highly underrated, and in some aspects Moon, 2001, you know, all the classics and that type of thing. But mainly it was about keeping it contained, and just ramping up the anxiety for the author when things got serious and got difficult. That was my main aim.
Mm-hmm. And you said that Pod was deeply personal for you. Why is that?
Well, I think that, you know, I think you can, there are two things about Pod which I wanted to do, was to deliver my conversation about what I think is happening in the world. I tried to use the world the pod as a metaphor for what's happening in the world. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't read Pod, but at some points she's too cold, at some points she's too hot, at some points she's sweating, and some points she's frozen. And I think that was my way of having a conversation about climate change on Earth and what we're going through and the things that are happening. And I didn't want it to be too political in any sense. But also, on a more personal level, I think it's an ode to my mother as well, who, yeah, I won't go into it and to make it quite deep or personal, but the idea of somebody sacrificing themselves for a greater good, shall we say, I think that's something that people can resonate with. And for me, it was a way to express my thanks for the sacrifices that my mother made. And I think there's something that catches up with us all. One day you're in your 30s and life is fine. And then suddenly, I've been told, you wake up and you're in your 60s and you wonder where it all went wrong or where it all went. And you question, you know, what did I do? What did I give it up for? What did I achieve? And certainly that played on my mind. And indeed, certain poetry and other literature, songs, lyrics, those types of things really enhanced that as I was planning the script. So yes, it's for me, it means a lot. For others, it might not. But at the end of the day, like most writers and directors say, I wrote it for me, you know?
Oh, that's nice. Well, I have a question about the story. You mentioned the mother, and near the end of the script, there's a message from the mother that the main character, Claire, has to decide between getting to hear that message from her mother or going on with the mission. She can't do both. And she opts to not hear the message. So what did that message say from the mother? I gotta know.
Oh, right. So yeah, there's a message that comes through. I think it would have been, it would have been, it's okay. It's fine. You know, it's, whatever she's doing for a greater purpose. And, the sacrifice that she was willing to make was worth it. But I mean, it's one of those, it's fine. You know, it's okay. You can do what you want.
Okay. That's good. How much research did you have to do about space and space exploration? Like, is this scientifically accurate?
So a lot of research went into it, especially when it came to figuring out how the black hole works and the terminal certain aspects of traveling through space. But then, you know, much like things like Ad Astra and gravity, there has to be an element of pure fiction where things are going on that are just out there and crazy. And I was okay with that. Although I've been made aware of much criticism from different forums of the asteroid belts and all these types of things. But again, I've tried to make it as based in scientific fact as I can. Some of the things that occur in the story, such as Jupiter being taken out. And Jupiter is an important planet to our solar system. It's why certain orbits are the way they are, why certain planets are created, why the asteroid belt itself is situated in where it is. And without having to spell it out in a screenplay, once that planet was gone, I was able to basically say, all right, all bets are off, because the thing that keeps the solar system intact, planet and orbital wise, is gone. So I can now play with the rules. And that was my key to being able to change certain things and really doing what I wanted to. So I've been sent some messages from people saying, hey, this comment on this forum says that you didn't know what you're talking about and this is nonsense. I'm like, well, listen, Jupiter's gone. Everything did happen. Don't worry about it. Just move on.
There you go. Perfect answer. Yeah, I've seen some of those comments and I just thought, I don't agree with those people, because when I'm reading something that's science fiction, I'm thinking, okay, this is a movie. Like, it's not real. So I'm not expecting everything to be completely accurate. Plus, I don't know like how fast you can travel from, you know, Jupiter to Mars or whatever. So I was along for the ride and I was actually really impressed with the terminology that you had in there. And obviously other people were impressed because the script has done very well for you. So I wouldn't worry too much about what certain people in certain forums might have said. Next question. Which actress would you like to play Claire if you could pick anyone?
That's a good question. I think that's I think I'll let the production company who are dealing with it now, I'll let them take care of that. I don't want to influence them. But when I was writing it, it was for me, it was always Helen Mirren, British, mature. She's a bit of a badass. I love what she does. So it would have been her. But the only thing I said when I sat down to discuss it with the producers, it was it has to be somebody mature. It has to be somebody in their 60s or 70s. Don't just find somebody and slap some CGI or makeup on them. That would be a disservice to the story. And I grew up watching Sigourney Weaver, Linda Hamilton, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis. These were my heroes as a kid. And especially, you know, Ellen Ripley from Aliens, one of my favorite films. It's they're powerful women. We see Arnold Schwarzenegger and we see Sly Stallone now in their 70s and 80s saving the world. Why can we not see mature women, strong, saving the world, doing something, you know, awesome? That's what I want to see. And I think that'll be great.
Amen. I can't wait to see who they cast. So Pod is 85 pages. Have you ever been asked to make it longer by your agents or your managers?
No, I wasn't. When the script first found its way into Bash Naran, my manager's hands, he was like, it's short, but it's a brisk read and there's a lot of action going on there. So we spoke about the length very, very briefly, and it was just like, no, we're going to go with it. This is how it is. Let's just go for it. Nice. That's the way it is.
Okay. What is your writing process? Do you do a beat sheet or a detailed outline before you start writing? And how many drafts did you write of Pod?
Right. So I actually spend more time planning than I do actually writing. I spend a lot of time working on character profile first, just figuring out who they are, their tone, and a particular comp to a different film that I'm perhaps a fan of. How much of Ellen Ripley should I borrow here? How much of a Sarah Connor is she here? And then I spend a considerable amount of time on treatment, normally 10 to 15 pages, where I'll flesh out basic, you know, beats and make sure I understand exactly where I'm going. I'm definitely an architecture when it comes to storytelling. I can't be too organic, although there is some freedom when I get to writing on the page. But essentially, I'll sit there and I'll spend a good three weeks to a month just writing out, planning, making sure I've got all the bases covered so that when I actually get to the first page, I can just start and get into it and go. And then once that first draft is complete, it normally takes about 2 to 3 weeks of very tempered, slow, take your time, don't rush, a couple of hours a day, get the best of my creative output, as opposed to trying to rush or trying to squeeze out these ideas when I'm mentally exhausted, whatever it might be. You know, that comes after a couple of weeks. And then I'll give it a rest. I'll put it away for about 2 to 3 weeks. I'll put it away in the drawer, you know, not the physical drawer, but in a folder on my desktop. And then I'll come back to it 2 or 3 weeks later and I'll read it through. I'll make any corrections and amendments. And then I'll send the script to three particular collaborators of mine. An actor, Ashley William Griffiths over there in the UAE, who's a fine actor. Faisal Jadir, who's a wonderful Canadian Iraqi playwright and director in his own right. And then Judah Badi, who I've mentioned before. Who's a wonderful cinematographer. And the reason being is that I get three different perspectives of the script. I'll get one from a writer's perspective, I'll get one from an actor's perspective, and one from a creative perspective. And they'll read it and they'll give me three different types of feedback. I'll understand if the actor says, well, I don't think the character would say X, or I would not think that this character would do this because it wouldn't make sense. And then I'll get Faisal's impression. And he's a very, very focused storyteller. He's a playwright. So his dialogue is always fantastic. And his way to sort of decipher the symbolism within the words and that type of thing is very on point. So I'll listen to what he has to say. And then I'll take that feedback back to these people that I trust, who can be very open and honest with me and be quite honest and brutal and say, yeah, this is garbage or whatever it might be. And then I'll go ahead and make some changes. Of course, that process of reps. So I'll go to them and I'll still keep my close confidence, you know, in the loop and explain to them what I'm trying to do and look for their words of encouragement or criticism. They're still important to keep those along with my reps, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome that you have those connections. Was that from the short films that you made, that you made those connections?
That's right. Yeah. You know, in the UAE, the film industry is very small and it's still growing. I had the pleasure of being part of an initiative with Image Nation, who were the biggest well, we are the biggest studio in the Middle East. They take on board Star Trek, Star Wars, you know, Mission Impossible, Fast and the Furious, whatever it gets shot in Dubai. It's that studio that takes over and does all the production work. And through that small community there, I was able to meet other like-minded creatives who are trying to make it in an area where it's a very transient place. There are many expats there. And finding and locking down a crew or, you know, cast of actors or particular creators is very difficult because people are always coming in and leaving. And it can't ever be your first job because you can only be in the country if you have a work permit. So, finding those people and sort of bringing them together and trying to collaborate on projects was very important to me. So when I started this seriously in 2016, getting that group together and finding out who was serious about this, you know, about making a dent in the industry, it was very important to me. You know, the first producer that helped me out was a gentleman called Ahmed Lutfi, who's a wonderful Canadian producer who was over there, and he was trying to cultivate a culture of filmmakers and creative types, and you know, I owed him a lot to that as well. So it was very much sticking with the people that you know you can trust, who believe and trust in your creativity, and pushing forwards together, trying to sort of send the elevator back down if one of us makes it, was the message that we all had. If one of us can make it out of here and do a good job somewhere, especially in Hollywood, let's try and help each other a bit. That's really important to me.
Yeah, that's great. That's dope. So when you completed Pod, the next step was to get it out there. Now, I know you entered contests because I would always see your name in contests that I had entered to. Of course, you would advance farther than me, but that's fine. No hate. did you do anything else to try to get it noticed, like sending email queries or trying to pitch producers directly? Or was it just contests that was your plan?
Well, a quick side note before, I always saw your name pop up as well. And in fact, I saw one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I'm a huge fan of the film The Thing by John Carpenter. And your short film story Log has a piece of artwork of a person laying on a bed and their innards being spiraled up into the extractor, the fan above them, right? It's a black and white sketch, right? And I absolutely loved it because to me it was very much where the monsters come out of the guy's chest. And I was obsessed with this picture. I saved it on my phone and I was like, whoever's writing a story about a killer log is a genius.
Oh man, thank you. I'm gonna save this sound clip because I'm still trying to get that movie made. But yeah, that's a storyboard that was for like a grant application I did. But yeah, go on about the contest. Thank you for the shout out.
No, it's okay. what I did was I had a very clear path in and my friend, my actor friend Ashley William Griffiths, he helped me with this. He's a spreadsheet guru. Basically, we went onto IMDb Pro and just launched this list of all the potential managers that I wanted to focus on after results of competitions came in. So I knew around about August, September, I was going to cold query X amount of managers, not agents, and I knew that I wanted to focus on those particular managers who have gone on to represent screenplay competition winners. So the correlation was looking at particular lists of competitions and saying, okay, so Screencraft, Page, whatever it might be, they've got a proven track list of winners. Now let's take a look at the managers that signed said winners. So they obviously are looking for people or have signed people who have won competitions. If I can take a risk on trying to get at least to the semifinals of certain competitions, I might have myself a chance then of querying in the subject line saying, I was a semifinalist, you have represented X writer from X competition, would you please take a look at this? It was a long shot, but it was at least a strategy instead of just trying to blindly put the script out there and hope that someone reads it instead of ignoring an email. So it was a two-pronged process of let's try and focus and target X amount of competitions, and then let's try and hit these managers up with an email when the competition results are in and hope that we've got further down the line. And it just so happened that, you know, by July time, I think Screencraft Sci-Fi came in and we won it. And then it all went from there. So that was always the plan.
Okay. So you won first place in the Screencraft Sci-Fi contest. Congratulations. What came of that? Like, were they the ones that hooked you up with a manager? Or did you have to still go out and query a manager and say, I won Screencraft? Like, how did that work?
Okay. So I got an email and I tried to remember all the small details, like there's little moments of excitement that occur when you think something is happening. So I remember things distinctly, like how I was feeling and where I was. I was in bed, it was 12 a.m. I got an email in my inbox. I was just about to go to bed. And it was from Tom over at Screencraft saying, congratulations, you've won Screencraft Sci-Fi. And I thought, that's brilliant. Because I'd seen that some of the winners there from those competitions had gone to be represented, which is exactly what I wanted. I need a manager. So I wrote back saying, thank you, this is brilliant, that's great. I went to bed. 8 hours later, when I woke up, I had an email from the manager that I wanted. And it was very bizarre. And it was Bashnaren. And he was like, hey, I've just seen you've won this competition. Can I read your script? Absolutely. This is perfect. Because he had gone on to represent another Screencraft Fellowship winner, Anna Klassen, who's now doing great things. And he's definitely helped progress her career. So I wanted to reach out to him anyway, and he had emailed me. So it was just one of those things of, this is perfect. So I sent him the script. And at the same time, Tom from Screencraft, we had a couple of phone calls on Skype, and they said, look, we're going to target these managers for you. Who have you had come in? I said, I've had this person come in, and I had about half a dozen managers reach out. And he said, okay, we'll guide you and help you along the way, and we'll give you the best advice. And 3 weeks later, Bash called again and said, hey, let's talk. And do you want to do this? Do you want to do this dance? And I said, of course, let's do the dance. So we danced.
Nice. It took him 3 weeks, eh? You sent him your script. You didn't hear from him for 3 weeks?
Yeah, he apologized. He had a lot going on. And I said, that's fine. It's perfectly. I remember the exact moment when he actually emailed me back. I was washing dishes. My phone was beside me. And it beeped, and I just looked over and it said Bashnaren-Pod. And I was like, okay, this is the moment. If he turns around and says it's on, then I'm going to do a little jig around the room. If the body of the text says thank you, but no thank you, well, at least I tried.
So you did the jig.
I did the jig.
So did you follow up with any of the other managers that you sent the script to? I have to ask, because it's a really common question in our server, knowing when to follow up. So, like, because it can be excruciating to wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I can't imagine how hard it was for you. Did you follow up with anybody?
I was personally reached out by about half a dozen managers who wanted to sign then and there, who said, we can take this somewhere. So it was a case of, you know, I didn't want to be rude or disrespectful or seem ungrateful, but I wanted to work with Bash. You know, we're both South Asian. He's from a fantastic company in Writ Large. His track record is wonderful. The kind of clients he works with are the people that I find myself to be quite familiar with. And it was a case of, well, let's not rush into this. You know, it's taken me a couple of years to get here anyway. What's a couple more weeks gonna do to me? Let's take it easy. But the need and want to reach out, I think the most appropriate thing is to give it at least 2 weeks. These people are constantly reading or have things going on. So when 3 weeks came by, it was no problem for me. It was like, look, I've waited this long. Let's give him some more time. He's a busy guy. Let's see what happens. And meanwhile, we still have options and have good relations with these other managers who I'm in constant contact with. Let's just take our time. I think when it comes to this question of people asking, what do we do? When's the best time? Just know that having a bit of patience will help. You've already waited this long. Just give it amount of time and think in your perspective from your day-to-day lifestyle, going to work, kids, relationships, whatever it might be, how much time realistically would you have to do what you're asking them to do and then come back with the appropriate feedback? Because if you're asking them to rush it, the chances are they really haven't read your script and given you the best of their time. It's not the answer that anybody wants, but I think for me personally, just a bit of patience would help.
Yeah, thank you. That's very good advice. So you live in Australia. Once you signed with this manager, did they fly you out to Los Angeles?
No. So I signed with Bash in August, and then a month later, September, that comes after August, yes. he sent me a message and he said, well, we've got David Boxerbaum and Sarah Nestor on board, who want to represent you from Verve. And I knew about them. I was like, brilliant, this is fantastic. And he said, you know, now we have to get you in, because what we want to try to do is get you in face-to-face time so we can speak with, you know, certain producers and production companies. And also maybe we'll have a chance of them having enough time to read the script for something like the Hit List or the Blacklist. But it's going to be a long shot because you're coming into this quite late. So we agreed on a date. You know, it was late October, early November. And I took myself out there because that was the only way to do it. And it was something that I wanted to do. And I, having lived in the States before, I wanted to make a bit of a trip out of it and see some old friends and visit some old friends over there. So it was a case of waiting for the right time, having the right team in place. And then it was, okay, let's go for it now.
So what did you do while you were in Los Angeles?
Well, I went to Roscoe's Chicken a lot and I ate a lot of chicken and waffles. Perhaps you could say too many.
That's not what I mean. No, were you doing like general meetings like every day? What happened? What's it like?
Yeah, so thankfully, Sarah's assistant over there, Adley, he's a really great guy. He arranged a fantastic sort of schedule for me. I was supposed to have about 15 to 20 meetings. I ended up having about 40 as more were laid on. I had it in about two weeks. It was back to back. It was 5 days a week. And although it was tiring and I spent a fortune on Ubers, it was the most exhilarating, fantastic experience I've ever had in my life. It was I was visiting these iconic studios and production houses that I only dreamed of, being a small, you know, from a small town in England, a million miles away from Hollywood. It was a dream. So I did these general meetings, and instantly when I walked into these meetings, I made it my number one priority to document as much as I could. So taking as many pictures and videos of said reception area, or because I wanted to remember those things. And perhaps when anyone were to ask me what's it like, I can give them exact details of what I went through and that feeling of what I went through, and explaining the process of how things work. And very quickly began to establish some really good conversations and relationships, and understood that it was more about personality than the product. They've already read your script. They already liked the script. They're not there to talk about the script. They're there to talk about yourself as a person and what potentially you could do together in the future. So it was a case of talking about the industry, likes and dislikes, and just becoming friends. And I had some wonderful meetings that lasted for hours, surprisingly. And then those general meetings, more often than not, turned into, well, what do you think about this project? Or would you be interested in this project? Or what would you say is this? Do you have an article for this? And that's just a natural progression and evolution of the conversation going, where they feel comfortable enough to say, yes, we would like to work with this person. So let's talk about some little bit of business. And then obviously maintaining those relationships afterwards was the key. But for 2 weeks, it was just back-to-back meetings and generals around Hollywood. And it was a wonderful, wonderful time.
Very exciting. So did you end up getting any writing assignments out of those meetings?
I definitely had a few offers. And being very selective of ones to take, Bash and my team, Sarah, David, are very good at sort of saying this, we think this is appropriate for you and this is not. And that was why I wanted to get a solid, seasoned manager behind me, so that they could say to me, it's very easy to say yes to every project that comes in, but having a manager that says, look, this would be better for you because of X reason, and then justifying it with proof is exactly right. So I'm working on a few now assignments, which came to me directly from those meetings, which was very important. But then obviously some of those meetings as well were about pod. I think a handful were about pod, in the sense of choosing a producer and a production company and who to go with. So that was also quite important.
Okay. So did Pod end up getting optioned?
Pod is now with a production company. I can exclusively tell you who that is because people have been asking me for a while, but I've just got to go ahead to confirm who it is. So it'll be a first exclusive reveal on the podcast. Yay.
Ooh, exciting. Thank you.
Yeah, it's all very exciting. We had many offers to go with certain production companies and producers. And in the end, one of my last meetings in LA was with Chronology, who are Eric Heiserer's company, who obviously Eric wrote Oscar-nominated Arrival. So
yeah,
it was definitely one of those things where...
Bird Box.
Yeah, Bird Box, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Thing. Plenty. Basically, yeah. Every genre film I could want to ever write, he's written.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I spoke to his team over there, Carmen and Phil and Eric, and we spoke about the vision for Pod and where we'd like to take it and those types of things. And it seemed like the best fit. And I have a good relationship, working relationship with them. They emphasized and stressed partnership and creative collaboration and working together as a team. And it felt like a really good vibe and a good fit. So we ended up going with them. And now Pod is in the process of being packaged. Directors and actors and that type of thing, and it's doing it quietly, confident of doing good things. So letting them take care of that's what they're good at, and I'll continue doing my writing and whatever else I'm up to.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Well, congratulations again, man. That's so sweet.
Thank you very much. It's very kind of you to say. It's all very exciting.
Of course. I'm happy for you. I mean, you seem like a really humble, down-to-earth, nice guy. So it's nice to see that you're getting this success. We haven't even gotten to the fact that this ended up number one on the hit list and in the top 10 on the blacklist. So I think, was that after you had been to Los Angeles and done those meetings?
Yes. So I arrived back in Melbourne mid-November, and we had a week left, I think, for voting for both the hit list and the blacklist. No, excuse me. The hit list had a week left and the blacklist was up until the end of November, if I remember correctly. So, you know, we had a frank conversation the day before I flew out with my reps and said, look, what do you think is going to happen here? I really want to make the blacklist because that would be a beautiful way to top off the year and you know, and also to help us push for the right team for this project. And I said, look, we're gonna get out there and we're gonna lobby for this and try to get this out there to as many hands as possible in the right hands. But having met those particular producers and those generals when I did, I think had a massive impact because your name sticks with them, your product sticks with them. They understand who you are as a person. The team were very surprised to find out that we made the hit list, and even more surprised that we made the blacklist because we thought we didn't have enough time, not enough circulation of the script being out there. Because they only went out there in August, September, October time, sorry. So it really wasn't out there long enough, we thought, to make an impact and to stick with people and to get enough votes to be on these lists. But when it came in that it was number one on the hit list, I was sat there reading the screen. I was like, hang on a second, what's going on here? This is crazy. That was wonderful. And then a few days later passed, and then the reps called me at about 3 a.m. And my phone was just like, who the hell is this calling me? And it was the team on a conference line. Like, congratulations. I was like, oh, what's happening? And then they were like, yeah, you're Pod's on the blacklist. And there's a picture of Franklin, you know, in the streets of LA. And there's a poster with your name on it. And indeed, I think the wonderful Discord server had posts as well. And I didn't know how to use the Discord app. So I was like, wait, what's happening? Why is my phone beeping? Why are people, what?
Yeah. I think I tagged you and was congratulating you because Franklin Leonard, the founder of the Blacklist, posted this picture of him walking by these billboards with posters with titles on it. That was obviously a clue of the titles we'd see on the Blacklist, and there was Pod. So that was really exciting. So you found out from your team before it was announced.
I think they, or indeed Bash, had seen the picture that you're referring to. And
oh, okay.
And I think, yeah. That's what I think happened. And they sort of reached out and said, "Hey," and then we had a massive conversation about it. And it was, at 3 a.m. and I was barely awake. But yeah, thank you for the tags. It was wonderful. When I finally figured out how to use the app, I found it. I was like, oh, that's so nice. But it was, I think it was about a week later. So me saying thanks, guys, didn't make any sense. But yeah.
No, that's okay. We knew what you were talking about. So now that you're on the blacklist, do you talk to other writers that are on their list? Is there a secret Facebook group?
No, there isn't, unfortunately. I don't particularly spend much time on social media, as you probably realized. There's not really. You do get a lot more email sent to you from upcoming writers. Hey, how did you get on the blacklist? How did you do this? Can I read your script? Can I read your script is the biggest one. And because of the process that it was going through, I was unable to send that out to many people because obviously it's under lock and key until they knew where it was going, and only for it to be released anyway by the blacklist and Launchpad. But you know, there's no secret group, but what it does do, it's from what I understand from my reps, is that it's enhances your reputation somewhat. Now the script is not just a script of a normal script or a script that's on a competition, but now it's got that blacklist. It's got this, you know, shine to it or whatever it does. I'm not entirely sure what it does to it, but it just makes it a little bit more wanted, I expect, from certain people. So that's the only difference that it's really made. And obviously I can have it in my bio as well. Great.
Oh, yeah. And I can write in the description of this episode, blacklist screenwriter. So that's nice. Have you met Franklin Leonard? Did he reach out to you personally?
I have not, and he has not. But I'm sure he's a busy guy. I saw that he's over at the Oscars, you know, taking pictures recently. So he's a busy guy. And obviously, he's good friends, from what I understand, with Taika Waititi, who's over from New Zealand, which is just over the corner, around the corner from us. And he's friends with him, and obviously Jojo Rabbit was a blacklist script, so it's all connected.
Yeah. Okay, well, Pod kind of reminds me of another blacklist script, which was called O2 by Christy LeBlanc. Do you get that a lot?
Somebody has mentioned that this sounds a lot like a script about another similar sort of scenario, but I don't know the name of it until you just told me. I didn't know who the writer was. I didn't do any research on it, but how similar is it?
Okay, well, I haven't read O2. It was one of the harder scripts to get. And when we finally did, I just didn't have time, I guess. But apparently it is about a woman who goes into like a cryogenic sleep. And when she wakes up, she's lost all memory. And I mean, I'm pretty sure it's in outer space and she's running out of oxygen. Right. So there's a lot of similarities in that way, but I haven't read it. So it might be completely different otherwise, but it's being made and Anne Hathaway is in it. I was just curious if you got that a lot.
No, I haven't. Most of the comments have been most of the comments have been your science is whack, is what a lot of people say.
Oh yeah.
The cool kid lingo, but, I'm never on social media long enough to get the criticism or the praise. I kind of miss it.
Yeah. Well, do you care about people saying that? Like with the success you've had with it now, does it matter to you? Does it hurt you when people say things like that?
No, not really. I don't particularly care, to be honest. It's and that's not it. Please don't excuse that for arrogance or anything. It's just that I don't have time to sit there on social media and worry about what people who I've never met say about the script. What matters is what my reps say. Is this working for them, and does it work for the producers that are going to make it, and do the people that put money into making these products believe in it enough to make them money? Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about for them. But at the same time, I think it's a state of mentality. I thrive on people criticizing, or rather critiquing my work, because to be complimented doesn't allow me to then go to enhance myself or to change the process of how I work to better my writing or my directing, whatever it might be. So if I'm going to continually get people saying that was amazing, that's not going to help me. If I'm getting critiqued from people who know what they're talking about, that's a different matter. That's me understanding and saying, right, this person knows what they're talking about. They have something to say, and I can learn from that and take my writing to another level because of what they've said. What you find, or what I found normally on forums and discussions and servers, especially when it comes time for blacklist and hit list results, you get a lot of writers, or upcoming writers rather, who are quite bitter, who have more negative things to say, or they'll roll their eyes and say, how does that script make the blacklist? Well, that person put in a lot of work, and that's quite disrespectful for you to say, how does that work? That writing is garbage, or whatever it might be. Well, you know, it's not that easy, and it's something that somebody somewhere has resonated with, and that's why it's on a particular list. So I think you have to sort of pick it out and say, this is what I will accept, and this is what I will not accept, and then find what works for you. As I said, my mentality is to thrive on the criticism, and I think in some way to enhance an ego is to prove people wrong, is to take that, to decipher it, to digest it, and say, right, you said that this wasn't good enough, well, I'm going to write something even better. And I think that sort of positive mentality helps. I mean, I know that my directing, I think you've seen, I don't know if you've seen The Replacement, but I did send you.
I didn't have a chance to watch it. I was watching all those interview clips you sent me, and then I ran out of time right. to watch the short film.
No
I'm
problem.
I'm so sorry.
No problem at all. No, it's fine. But what I'm acutely aware of is that my directing is nowhere near as good as what my writing is perceived to be. And that is because of a lack of practice. Practice will only make me better. But I'm aware of that. And so to combat that, I will take the critique of the short, and I will try to do better by making more films. It's the only way I can do it. And I think that's just the way to take those any criticism. That personally, for me, that's what works for me.
Good. Okay. So do your managers expect you to output a certain amount of scripts per year now that you're repped?
Yes. So there's a conversation that takes place quite early on, where they sort of say, look, this is what we expect from you. Of course, that changes when you get writing assignments coming in from various production companies and producers and say, look, that will change things. But let's look for, I mean, they'll look at your skill set and say, look, can you give us a pilot here or a couple of pilots here? And that's when we started to talk about working together. And, you know, you give a list of, this is what I've got planned. And the way that I work personally is to have a list of, I'm going to write three to four features a year. These are the ideas I've got rolling around, and this is what I've already planned. I'm not going to deviate from this. And this is the pilot that I wish to write at the end of the year. And to discuss those and go, right, this is cool, this is not cool, let's get rid of this. And then they'll maybe come in and say, can you write for example, a superhero movie? Can you write, for example, you know, a Jaws movie? And then the reason being that they've heard in the industry that they're looking for this type of script. And then they'll sort of suggest it, and then you'll try to fit it into what you've already got going. And then obviously, like I mentioned, assignments will pop up sometimes and say, hey, isn't Nabil interested in this? Or, you know, whatever the case may be. So it's quite fluid, but they do expect things to come from you. But saying that, at the same time, that's why you want to get repped. You want to get repped so that whenever you sit down to write something, you know that writing, that document, that PDF file is going to go to somebody who's actually going to read it and be able to do something with it. So for me, it's a challenge which I love. I love that idea of, here, I'm writing this for a reason, for a purpose. So yeah, that's it.
What are some of your weaknesses as a screenwriter?
Everything. All of it. It's I'm never satisfied with anything.
Okay, so you just suck at everything?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I think it helps people to relate, because a lot of my guests on this show are very successful. And so I think it helps to know that there's things you still are striving to get better at, or there's, you know, even just challenges or rejections that you still face.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is not becoming complacent or comfortable with my writing, if that makes any sense. If I should elaborate, I would say something that changed for me when starting last year and writing projects like Pod and the Paraguay project, which was a pilot that I wrote and put into budget competitions last year as well, was changing the process of how I write. So the way that I approach writing, it was off the back of a wonderful TED talk, you could say, of a musician in Compo, Elbin. He did a soundtrack for a video game called Doom. And excuse me, but I am a massive nerd, comic book nerd, and video game nerd. So for me, it was wonderful to listen to and quite informative. And what he spoke about was this idea of changing the process and changing, which results different results and changing the outcome. So for me, it's a case of not getting stale and stagnant in the way that I approach writing. What does that mean? That means, you know, let's start off the script in a different manner. Let's not start off with a flashback. Let's start off with a monologue. Let's start off the script starting the scene late or early or whatever it might be. Let's come at it from a fresh perspective every time so that I don't get complacent and it doesn't get boring and drab. And that's really helped me keep me on my toes when it comes to focusing on things like dialogue and the way that it's written, different dialects and that type of thing. I think every writer will say dialogue is something they want to focus on or get better at. For me, I try to definitely focus on all of and all, the entire thing. And for me, also because I know that I do this 5 days a week, 3 to 4 hours a day. Writing is all I do. I focus all my time on it. I like to do things like writing exercises, much like I did when I was at high school. Those worked for me as a kid. Creative classes worked. So it occurred to me, why not have short film exercises? Why can't I write 10 pages and focus solely on dramatic irony, or 10 pages of pure conflict and building that conflict, or 10 pages short film of just pure dialogue and having this rich conversation between 2, 3, or 4 characters? And if I can do that and test myself, much like training for a soccer game or any type of sport, I'm practicing and learning. And I think that helps me as well. I don't know if many people do that, but for me, certainly, those scripts don't go anywhere. They don't go off to anybody, but it's enough for me to practice.
Let's now go to a call-in question from one of the members of our server. This message is from Jeremiah. He's got a question for you.
Hey there, this is Jeremiah 8687. I am a longtime fan and a first-time caller. My question for Nabil is, and I apologize if I've butchered your name, but what's the single greatest lesson you've learned from the first moment you began writing screenplays to the success of making the 2019 Blacklist? And this can pertain either to craft or to the business side of writing films. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Good luck in all your future writing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the question. That's a great question. What I've learned is it's a collaborative effort, and having good people around you to read your material and to help you focus in on it is important, but also not to rush. I think that's the key thing that I've learned. Don't rush anything. Take your time. I see a lot of people discussing things on Twitter and other forums where they're like, I've written 15 scripts in a week or whatever it might be. I'm sure you've read the same thing. I think taking your time and taking a page out of Stephen King's book, where he says, you know, he writes something, he puts it away for about 3 or 4 weeks, doesn't look at it, comes back with fresh eyes, and then reevaluates what he's doing. Take your time, make the most of your creative output from your mind, and that's what I would say. It's just taking time and making sure that when the product is complete, collaboration is key.
Okay, so what are you working on now? What's next for you?
Well, I've just soon after Pod was completed, I was working on something what I would never do again, which was a biopic, which was quite personal to me. So I finished that, and I think it's the only time I'll delve into drama and, you know, un-genre-related sort of project. So that's been done. And then at the end of the year, what I was pitching to most of the producers and production companies was a horror that I'm very, very involved in right now. It's done. It's with the reps. It's imminently about to be released out there. And it's something from my cultural perspective. I won't go too much into it, but I think it's going to resonate pretty well. And right now, this very moment between talking to yourself, working on an assignment for a particular production company. So yeah, it's very busy, very busy.
Very cool. I can't wait to hear about that horror. Ooh, that's going to be good. You have to tell me later when you're allowed. Mm. Tell everyone where they can learn more about you. What is your website? What's your Twitter?
Sure thing. So my Twitter is at Nabil Chowdhury. Very original. It's my name. It's a long name. And my Instagram is at Nabil Chowdhury as well. And my website is all the W's, NabilChowdhury.com. Very, very, very original. So yeah, that's where you'll find everything to do with me.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us. It was a pleasure having you. Listeners, if you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, share it on social media, join the Discord server, and consider supporting us on Patreon so you can get access to that sweet, sweet bonus content. I'm your host, Smish, saying peace out and keep on writing.